Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? We are recording just after Arsenal's 3-0 Europa League win against Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League. Did I say it was the Europa League already? I think I might have. But, you know, that's fine. It was our 3-0 Europa League win in the Europa League against Eintracht Frankfurt, who are also in the Europa League. And let me tell you something here, folks. We are back. We are back, baby. After conceding 31 attempts on goal against Watford at the weekend, we restricted Frankfurt to a mere 24 efforts on goal. That's like, I don't know what percentage-wise. I'm going to guess like 25, 24% fewer, is it? I don't know. I should look it up, shouldn't I? I don't know how to do it. I'm not good at maths. Oh, that's all I'm saying. I'm just guessing that it's around 25 or 24, 23% better, or 20 or 26. I don't know. I'm just saying it is better. It's better. The improvement is there. We're on the right trajectory. Things are on the up and up. Not only did we restrict them to 24 attempts on goal, we had 16 ourselves, having only had 7, I think. At Watford. So that's like 200 and something percent. Like, in terms of percentages, we're fucking knocking it out of the park here. 3-0, clean sheet, goals from Joe Willock, Bukayo Saka, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Clean sheet, great performance from Emi Martinez. What were we worrying about at all when we looked at that second half against Watford? That's now in the past and completely forgotten because we've won a game of football again. That's the way it works, right? Look, we are going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about the Eintracht Frankfurt game now in just a moment, and we'll be looking ahead to the Aston Villa game at the weekend. We're playing them on Sunday at the Emirates, a game that I'm going over for, so looking forward to seeing my first game of the season, well, you know, in person and what have you. And hopefully it's a bit more Frankfurt and a lot less Watford. A lot less Watford, like 600% less Watford and 39,000% more Frankfurt in terms of the outcome and the goals and the clean sheet, if not necessarily the performance. But we better talk about the game, and I'm joined this evening mere tens of minutes after the final whistle by Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm all right. A little bit down the line, we are going to have to touch on some of the things about this 3-0 win, which weren't perfect, it would be fair to say. Some of the issues that we saw last weekend against Watford were kind of there. But I think there was enough good stuff to focus on that first and foremost. And look, we're going to talk about some young players here. We should just make it clear from the start that if we're talking about them in glowing terms and extolling their virtues, it doesn't mean that we're hyping them up to be the next Vieira or the next whoever. It just means we enjoyed their performances against Frankfurt, right?
I mean, I did tweet about midway through the first half, marry me, Joe, Vieira, Willock, but sure, whatever.
I want to be part of the Joe Willock fan club. If there isn't a fan club, I might just set up the fan club.
I mean, I think now's a good time, right? I mean, we saw that if you go early with these things like Carlos Vela News, you can really dominate the market. look, the boy had another great game today, I think.
We're starting with Joe. Super Joe. Yeah. Mega Joe.
I mean, I think up until he went off, actually, he was probably the man of the match. So it's amazing that Saka, in his absence, then went and took things into his own hands. But no, Willock really impressed me again. It's just his ability to carry the ball long distances. And, you know, he always seems quite calm and assured. And I know he kind of missed a chance before he scored the one that he did, which was a little bit lucky. But it was another really interesting showing, I thought.
People will, like you did, say the new Vieira, or they might say, like, there are shades of Abu Diaby in the way that Joe Willock plays. But I have to say, and I was just talking to James about this on WhatsApp, that, like, there's a whack of Aaron Ramsey off Joe Willock.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I can see that.
In, like, you see him stride through the midfield the way he did in that second half, and he played that pass for Aubameyang, and the shot was cut out, and you think, okay, there's some Vieira in there. But his ability to arrive in the box at the right time, he missed that chance, obviously, in the first half, the one you referenced, and it was a little bit difficult because he had to get the ball out from under his feet. He sort of had to jump, and he put it wide. But we saw last season as well, he just has this ability to be in the right place at the right time. So there's this, you know, we're not just getting the new Vieira, we're getting the new Ramsey as well. This is amazing.
I mean, you watch him, and what becomes very, very clear is when an attack starts building up, he wants to be in the box. He wants to score the goal. And I think he kind of, to a certain extent, some of our players maybe think, oh, I'll hold back here. But he absolutely sniffs the opportunity. And he's got no, you know, he makes no bones about trying to be there. He said when he signed the new contract the other day, actually, that, you know, scoring more, getting more assists is exactly what he's aiming for. And I look at Iwobi, who departed, who kept saying stuff like that, but never really managed to find himself in those positions. He never made those runs. Willock somehow just has that eye. And actually, I think a little bit more composure, and we've got ourselves a real player there, because, you know, he's already scored several goals for the first team. And I think it, you know, it can become something of a complex for young players. I think almost you might look at Reece Nelson now and wonder, oh, he hasn't scored a goal for the first team yet, and he's into his third season of playing top flight football.
Yeah.
But obviously Willock, you know, very quickly sort of ticked that off his list, and it becomes one less thing to think about. He just seems very natural now. Really, really impressive. I mean, obviously, yes, as we said at the beginning of the show, we've got to kind of keep things in perspective. I think the good thing is that this tournament is just ripe for him to show his progress. I really think over the next few weeks, this and the League Cup games, you know, we can bed him in, really,
for sure. And this was probably our most tricky fixture, hence the reason we took, you know, Aubameyang rather than play somebody like Tyrese Jean-Jules. You know, we'll wait and see. I know there was some concern over Aubameyang, and I was a little bit worried about it myself. I think we can say he came through the game well. He scored himself a goal. I think the wisdom of playing Aubameyang tonight will be evidenced on Sunday when we see what kind of a performance we get out of him then, because we're going to have to ask him to do 90 minutes against Aston Villa, because he's basically our only striker at senior level.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a separate issue. I just want to stay on Willock for a moment. And I remember in the summer when I was watching him against Bayern Munich in LA and thinking, holy crap, something has happened here. Something's gone on with this guy that it's either physical development, his maturity as a footballer. He's absolutely determined to play himself into the first team with what he can do in preseason. Because often preseason games are like, well, yeah, we'll play some kids until all our senior players are back. And then, you know, they fade away to under 23 level again. But that wasn't the case with Willock. You know, he really grasped his opportunity in preseason, so much so that Emery, you know, somebody who you would say is not necessarily renowned for giving young players of that age a chance when he might have more senior options or more experienced options. You know, he picked him away at Newcastle on the first game of the season. He picked him at Burnley, against Burnley. He picked him away at Liverpool. And that's a real show of faith in the talent and the potential that he has that Emery is seeing and the coaching staff are seeing every day on the training ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think a bit like Matteo Guendouzi at the beginning of last season, you know, someone who had a good preseason. In fairness, actually, even Emil Smith Rowe in preseason last year, they both kind of got early opportunities. After that, it was all on them to then deliver in the bigger games. And I think you have to say with Guendouzi at the beginning of last season and definitely Willock here, what you're seeing is players taking their chances. Now, is that down to natural talent? Are we just making it much easier, more comfortable for them to deliver on that? I mean, the you know, Mertesacker has spoken recently and often about kind of creating an environment for these players to thrive in.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a little bit of that. But I mean, it's the fact of the matter is, I mean, we've got a nice little group of players there. And if we can just keep easing them into situations like this and they get more and more minutes, after a while you stop considering them as kids and they become kind of bona fide like first team regular options. And I, you know, something like that happened with Iwobi kind of under the radar. You sort of have a couple of appearances and then suddenly bang, like they're a first team player and you stop thinking of them as a kind of, oh, will he get a game, an exciting prospect?
Yeah.
So yeah, I genuinely impressed by Willock. Really, really am. I mean, if we'd signed him in the summer, you'd be saying that's a £30 million player right there, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the current market, you don't get much for that kind of money. And yeah, you know, so yeah, you're absolutely right. And the fact that he's come through the academy and he's signed a new deal is really, really promising. And I think the new deal has got to be something that gives him a lot of confidence as well about, you know, his future at the club. And I tell you, one of the things that I really liked about his performance against Frankfurt was the fact that he got a booking and it was, you know, it was maybe a little bit harsh. But where did he get the booking? He was covering the right back position. You know, it's something I noticed during the summer as well, that he will really do his defensive work also.
He's definitely got a level of mobility that, let's say, Granit Xhaka doesn't have.
Was it Barcelona? Was it the Barcelona game where he made an amazing clearance from almost underneath the crossbar and it was just simply down to him, you know, being aware of where the play was and where the ball was going and where he needed to be?
I mean, he's a player also who has absolutely no qualms in going really deep to get the ball and seems very comfortable being able to pull it away from those situations. And then looks as equally comfortable in and around, you know, the final third of the pitch when we're attacking. So to have those qualities, to find a box-to-box midfielder in your academy like that is a genuine, like, gem.
Yeah.
The key now, I guess, is, you know, obviously you just hope that he keeps building his confidence. And the other thing is just he has to avoid an injury, because it tends to be at this age that injuries, once they knock you out of your stride a little bit, it can really take a toll. I mean, I think Emil Smith Rowe's development has probably been put back by quite a bit by the injury that he picked up, which took him out for 6 months. So, I mean, there's nothing to suggest he will pick one up, because he seems like a much, much stronger, more physical presence than he did this time last year.
Yeah, that's true. Just before we move on to Saka, Smith Rowe got his first start for, I don't know how long, it's been a while since he started a game of football, because he went on loan last year to Germany and, you know, barely played because of the hip injury that he had. A sort of a quiet game, as you might expect, but good to see him back. And there was a moment, I think, in the second half where he really showed a nice turn of pace down the right-hand side to win the ball, and, you know, not much came of it. But, you know, you can see that the talent is there. And, you know, with the Europa League being the way it is, with our need to preserve, if you like, our key players, our senior players for the Premier League when we play the other teams in this group, Standard Liège and Vitória, you know, you don't want to take anything for granted. But those are games where you can really throw in young players. So you're looking at Smith Rowe hopefully staying fit and getting another 5 or 6 games, playing in the Carabao Cup, playing in the Europa League games, and sort of trying to get himself back to where he was before that injury.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as was the case with Willock, I mean, he's got goals under his belt already, so he doesn't have to worry about that. He should, to a certain extent, be able to play relatively relaxed. He's an attacking threat. He's got really good feet. You know, he seems relatively calm on the ball. I think for him, it really is, as you said, just all about maintaining his fitness. I mean, this niggly groin problem, I don't know if it's been the same one for the last, I mean, it's coming up to a year. It's kind of blighted him on and off. because he made a real impression in the Europa League last year. I remember that the games against Karabag and was it Vorskla?
Yeah,
yeah. You know, he was a real threat. You know, coming in off the right hand side. In the preseason, we'd seen him kind of playing in a more of a central position. So again, like Willock, he's got all the ingredients. It's just about putting them together and playing regularly.
Were you a little bit surprised not to see Reece Nelson start?
A little bit, but then I feel like he must be seeing in training what Saka's been doing and wondering whether Saka needs a chance. He's going to have to take a chance at the expense of someone else. The natural position for him on that pitch was to play on the left side of the attack, as was the case with Nelson. I kind of felt like this was more a case of, you know, there's another game coming up in a week's time, whatever it is, less than a week's time, against Nottingham Forest, and I can fully see Nelson playing that game. It's possible Nelson might even start at the weekend against Villa. I was maybe slightly surprised, mostly because I guess he has experience in Germany, right? I think he probably played against Frankfurt during his time at Hoffenheim. A little bit of surprise. I mean, it's Arsenal fans are probably all wondering the same thing: is when's Reece Nelson going to explode for Arsenal like he did for Hoffenheim? There's a slight worry, I guess, in the same way that there is about Pepe. You're kind of just waiting for that first goal, that first moment to cling to.
Yeah.
But I mean, what can you say? I mean, Saka took his chance tonight, and right now you'd say who should play against Aston Villa if you had a toss up between those two, and you'd probably say Saka.
Well, yeah, given what he did in the second half in particular. Like I thought he started quite slowly, it has to be said, which is normal and understandable, but whoa, spaceship going by?
I mean, I felt, you know, kind of about halfway through that first half as the game got more and more stretched.
Sorry, there was just a it sounded like a spaceship going by outside your window there.
2 seconds, let me just
No, it's okay. It's fine. I'm just fine. It's just you completely ignored what I said about the spaceship. And
I think the mic actually just went dead for a second as well.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, let's not worry about it. This is all part of the podcasting fun. I'll leave it in. We were talking about Saka, and I was saying basically that I thought, you know, he started the game a little bit slowly. It took him a little while to get into it. But when he did get into it, it was like, oh, my goodness. The second half was just sensational from him. I know he was involved in Willock's goal. And I suppose he will. Will he be credited with an assist for that? Because it was the final pass
It would be criminal if they didn't, because actually when you see where he picks up the ball and the turn that he does to then make space to then play the pass, it really is like you couldn't have asked for more from him in that particular situation. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he did brilliantly taking the ball from deep and giving the ball to Willock, who still had quite a lot to do. I'm sort of going at it from the point of view where the assist for Aubameyang in the second half, late in the game, that's, you know, like a true assist. You put the ball through to the man and the man just finishes. Whereas there was a bit more for Willock to do, but it's to take nothing away from what Saka did before giving the ball to Willock. That combination down the left-hand side, again, Joe Willock, you know, you think about where he was when he picked up the ball as well, you know, from the attacking left-sided midfield player. That's where he's picking up the ball. And, you know, he's in the right-back position. He's in central midfield. I must look up the heat map for Joe Willock. But
I've just looked up the chances created for Saka and Willock, and both of them topped the game. So Saka was with 5. Willock was with 3. And, I mean, creating 5 chances in a game is pretty spectacular at 18 years old. Yeah. 2 of them obviously leading to goals.
Yeah, it really is. Just as a note, Reece Nelson scored against Eintracht Frankfurt last season.
There you go.
So,
so he's already proved himself there then.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Fine.
Yeah, you know, he knew he didn't need to do it against he didn't need to do it against Frankfurt again. But yeah, I mean, Saka is a guy, he's only just gone 18. And again, I remember watching him during the summer and thinking he's ready for first team football, like not necessarily ready to start week in, week out or anything like that. But you look at a guy and you look at the way he plays and you look at the way he tries to play the game. I mean, physically, he's there. You know, he's strong enough. He's quick enough. He's muscular enough. You know, he's not going to get knocked around too easily by anybody. But the way that he tries to play the game is really, really positive. And it made me think, yeah, he's definitely ready for minutes for the first team. Again, looking at the Europa League and looking at the Carabao Cup. And, you know, he's kind of exploded onto the scene because it's all been about Willock. It's been about Nelson. It's been about Pepe. And here's this guy who's just come, not out of nowhere, because we all know who he is, but he hasn't had too many chances. And tonight, he absolutely was man of the match.
I mean, that second half performance, I mean, he was just absolutely shredding them to pieces. I mean, it's, you know, you have to remember he also caused their defender to, or midfielder, to get sent off for that second yellow as well, which I think was actually quite a turning point given the way that the game was being played, just so end to end. To have that little bit of extra space ended up making all the difference. I mean, what can you say about the finish? I mean, obviously Pepe looked up, found him, and he took one lovely touch, and then suddenly it was just, I didn't have any doubts. The moment it left his foot, it was in. A real beauty. And, like, to have someone who can do that with his left foot, I mean, he's basically shown up Pepe a little bit there. I know Martin Keown's already been kind of going with the hyperbole and saying he's, you know, he's better than the £72 million signing and all that. But just you know, classic Keown, I think. Hopefully he gets spurred on like Mertesacker did. Old Pepe.
Yeah.
I know we need to try and keep things in perspective, but there's not many people do that at 18 years old. It can go the wrong way. I mean, we saw David Bentley years ago, didn't we, come on and produce a really great finish against Middlesbrough, I think it was, in an FA Cup game.
There are always
talents out there who can do special things. He's just got to keep doing it now. That's what I really want to see. I want to see him keep doing that.
Well, I think we all do. And it's, you know, it is one of those things where when you sort of have doubts about other things, and we will come to those in a moment, when you have doubts and when you have concerns and when you're worried about, you know, the fact that we're not that great defensively and midfield, you know, the shape of midfield isn't quite what you would expect it to be, you look for things which excite you, and you look for things which are positive, and you look for things which give you enthusiasm and make you look forward to games. And, like, you know, I'll be honest anyway, I can't speak for anyone else and I won't speak for you, but the Europa League, you know, it's kind of shit, you know, it's basically shit. And if there is something that can pique our interest in this season's competition, it is the young players that we have at this football club who, a couple of them have proven tonight that they're ready to play, but B, are out to prove not just that they're ready to play in the Europa League, but they're ready to play in the Premier League as well. This is what their chance is for. It's to stake a claim for a place, not just when you're playing in the Europa League, but, you know, week in, week out.
Well, it's the young British core that I think Per Mertesacker was so excited about. You know, he's been desperate to try and foster a sense of Arsenal-ness, but also, I guess, Britishness within the squad. For some reason, he, a German, has looked at this from the outside and said, this needs to be a British core. This will resonate with the fans. This will give them something to cling to. And I'm not saying that necessarily nationality is the key thing here, but the fact that they kind of get the club, they've been around it for a while, I think that will add up in the long term. It certainly gives the academy three or four players to kind of pin up on the board and say to all the next guys coming through, look, this can be done. And I think we're seeing, you know, already there's a few there who are lining up behind them. You know, I'm genuinely excited. They all seem like really nice, down-to-earth lads as well. If you kind of listen to them speak, they all seem very humble. Yeah. Sort of, there's nothing particularly flash about them at the moment. Now, I know that it's very young. I think I saw something. I think Saka's, you know, at GCSE's got kind of like three or four A stars and the rest were A's or something. So he's an intelligent kid as well. I hope all of that adds up to you know, it all adds up to being the right ingredients to have a real star on our hands. the only thing is that, you know, we do have other players, and when Lacazette's back and Pepe's, you know, fully firing, we've got Aubameyang, like, they might not get game time later in the season, especially in the league. It's how they cope with that. Do we then potentially look to loan them out? You know, particularly if we went out of, let's say, the League Cup or the FA Cup early in January, we might look to sort of give them minutes elsewhere. I still feel like a loan move for Smith Rowe, given his injury problems, isn't completely out of the question in January.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a few questions, but there's been some answers as well along the way today.
Yeah, I think it just depends how useful Unai Emery considers them for Premier League. And I, you know, we don't have the biggest squad as it is. You know, I was, you know, looking at the squad on Soccer Base, and, you know, it's quite short. You know, we don't have...
It is. Particularly up front, actually. Yeah. I mean, I almost always forget that Martinelli exists. And, you know, you consider that he's probably going to play in one of the front roles as well.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see if he gets a game on Tuesday against Nottingham Forest, because he must be chomping at the bit, having seen this.
For sure. You know, but that's where I think the potential loans in January might not happen. I mean, we might do some incoming business in January. Mm. Who knows? But, you know, I think... if these players can prove themselves at Europa League level and even League Cup level, depending on who we're playing, you know, and they've shown that they can make an impact. You know, Willock has shown he can do it in the Premier League already. Saka, you know, has to get his chance yet. But I think if they can be considered players who give us something, give us options, and also give us depth, you know, if we go far into the Europa League as well, if we're heading towards the quarterfinals, the semifinals, the final... there is a real need to have depth in your squad, because the fatigue can play a part. It really can. I just want to talk. I'm going to take a little break in the middle of this, but before we do, I think he's not a young player because he's our longest serving player, but he's a player who we haven't seen an awful lot of over the years at Arsenal, and that's Emi Martinez. And I thought had a really, really good game. He had a loan spell at Reading in the second half of last season, which looks like it's done him the world of good.
Yeah. I mean, I think he went off to that that loan move at the Majewski and kind of knew that when he came back that the path was going to be clear for him to have a real shot at challenging Bernd Leno. He knew that Petr Cech was going to retire. He knew that David Ospina was going to be sold. I think he also knew that this was going to be his last chance. And I really feel like he's sort of knuckled down. I mentioned actually to you in a private chat this morning that, you know, I'd been reading an article by James, Gunnerblog James, on The Athletic, and that was all about Emi Martinez. And, you know, you listen to the, you read about the preparation that he's been making and the guys that have been working with him. And I think he genuinely feels like he can challenge Leno now.
Yeah. Well, that's what he wants.
His handling tonight was unbelievable. I mean, he didn't put a, you know, there wasn't a single drop ball, I didn't feel.
No, high crosses, low crosses.
Yeah,
like he was
everything.
There. He read everything brilliantly. He was brave when he had to get down at the feet of an attacker. He made some very good saves. There was
and his distribution was good as well.
Well, yeah, there was a weird thing going on though tonight when we had goal kicks. I was absolutely waiting for the cameras to be trained on the Arsenal defense. Given what happened against Watford, I was waiting for the cameras to see what exactly we were going to do and how we were going to do it. And quite often, they sort of showed a replay, or they cut to Emery on the sideline, or they show some of the Frankfurt fans waving their gigantic flags, and then the ball is in play and you don't quite know what's happened and how we've distributed the ball. But it looked and felt a little bit safer. I mean, I was a little bit surprised that Frankfurt didn't try and pressure us a bit more in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the game was so open that actually it wasn't like they weren't struggling to make chances, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even need to press us there, and they still managed to get the ball in dangerous areas and push forward. I mean, back on Martinez, I mean, I guess when I was thinking about the distribution, it wasn't just with his feet. You actually watched the way that he sprung the final attack for the Aubameyang goal.
Yeah.
You know, he was very quick to claim the ball, and then, you know, he had the awareness to see Xhaka was moving forward and in space, and he gave it to him quickly. There was no kind of, I'm going to hold on to the ball now because it's the last minute and we're winning 2-0 and I'm going to waste time. He thought, you know what, let's just go for this. And I like that. You know, I like it when a goalkeeper's kind of proactive. I like it when a goalkeeper kind of looks in those situations and goes, okay, I trust my teammates. They can go and there's an opportunity here. You know, I guess his next chance is Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then after that, he's biding his time, isn't he, really? A few more Europa League games, but he's basically waiting for an injury, which is the weird life of a goalkeeper. Because I still don't think that Emery's going to necessarily change his mind about who's number one.
No, I don't think so. But that's how Leno got in last season over Cech. Yeah. And obviously there was a sort of natural attrition with Cech retiring. But, you know, it's good if we have a goalkeeper who can put some pressure on the number one.
Mm.
So, look, you know, we'll see. I think it's one of those things where you kind of go, well, we've had that discussion, haven't we, about, like, it would be good to have a really clear number one goalkeeper. But at the same time, if that goalkeeper feels comfortable and isn't under any pressure for his place, then complacency can potentially set in. Look, I'm going to take a little break here, and then we're going to return and talk about some of the things against Frankfurt which weren't quite as positive as Saka and Martinez and Joe Willock.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Okay, we are back, and in this second part, we're going to look at some of the things that happened against Eintracht Frankfurt, which weren't necessarily as positive as young players making themselves lifelong heroes to all of us until their next game anyway. But, you know, going back to Martinez very quickly, when your goalkeeper has an outstanding performance, it's usually because your goalkeeper is kind of a bit busy. And he was a little bit busy. Eintracht Frankfurt had 24 attempts on goal to our 16, which is still a lot, though. And that is a problem that we're going to have to face up to. And it's something that Unai Emery is really, really going to have to get on top of. In mitigation, I guess you would say it's a back four that didn't or has never played together before. Chambers is really not a right back, and I kind of feel for him being played there. He's willing, he runs, but he can be exposed defensively. He certainly was in the first half. Very good on the ball, though, it has to be said. But, you know, Mustafi and Luiz, I don't think did anything particularly wrong. But on paper, it's the kind of central defensive partnership that would give you the shits. Kolasinac at left back. But, you know, it's not just about the back four. It's about the ball getting to those areas where the back four can be exposed. So, again, we have issues in midfield where I think it's organizational, because I would have said, I thought Xhaka played quite well. I thought he had a good game. I thought Torreira looked a little bit rusty at times, a little bit sloppy, but, you know, he was all right. Joe Willock was good. He did his work. And it's not for the want of trying or lack of effort or anything like that in midfield, but it just feels like it's so easy to get between our lines, you know, and to cause us problems.
I mean, the shots on goal thing is obviously a massive worry, but actually looking at the statistics, the one that really stands out for me this evening, and it's something that I kind of felt was the case at the time, Frankfurt had 35 crosses. 35 crosses basically means you are abandoning the wide areas and just letting the people out wide get the ball into the box. And it feels like this has become a bit of a common thread this season. I mean, against Liverpool, they had countless crosses where we just gave up the wide spaces, played that diamond, kept it kind of narrow in the middle. I just don't feel like you can afford to allow people in wide places to get the ball in like that, because inevitably, if the ball drops into the box, there's going to be one of two options. Either there's a shot on goal or there's a clearance. If there's a clearance, given that we keep surrendering the wide areas, the ball keeps coming back again.
Yeah.
So I think this, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, you hope, right? We've got two fullbacks coming back, Tierney and Bellerin, who are supposed to play for the under-23s, which will be tonight by the time people listen to this, that somehow they will provide more solidity in those areas. But if it's a tactical thing and we are just giving up that space, I'm slightly baffled by it.
Well, we did against Liverpool. Deliberately, I think, by playing the diamond, and we let the fullbacks have it. And, you know, it wasn't a strategy I was particularly happy about. But we also did it against Watford, where they had a lot of space left and right. Not so many crosses, but they tried to work the ball into our box. I mean, Unai Emery can't be blind to this.
I can only assume that he's desperately hoping that he's well aware that all the other teams look at our fullback areas and they must go, there's a weak spot there. And when you know that there's a weak spot, you're obviously going to attack it. And the bonus for them is knowing that at the moment our centre-backs are kind of looking pretty dodgy, that if you get the ball into the box, then there's definitely going to be an opportunity for you. If this is a tactic, and I don't know, there's plenty of people out there who are better tuned in to talking tactics than I am. But it definitely feels like when the ebb and flow of games gets going, that some of our players certainly aren't being castigated for not being in certain positions of the pitch. I don't see Emery having a massive go at Kolasinac or someone for not closing down in those areas. It feels like, you know, they're doing as they're being told, and what they're being told is to lay off. If we keep doing this, though, we got lucky tonight, right? Because this game quite easily could have gone the other way. There's no doubt about that. And not only that, I mean, we've seen it all before, right? This Arsenal team can crumble in the space of 5 minutes. So one goal becomes three, and you know, you've gone and lost a game in before there's 20 minutes left of the final, you know, of the second half. It frustrates me because it is a negative, right? It is one of those things that will nag away at me until we play our next game, that we have this, you know, looseness, I guess it is, that other teams know about it, and that, quite frankly, unless we week in, week out start working on this, it's going to be a problem. Like, other teams will try this again next week. Just because, you know, we've won tonight doesn't mean that other teams, bigger teams, better teams won't give us a much give us a similar examination. I'm waffling at this.
I know what you mean. It's the perception of what the team is and you know how you can get at the opposition, and we look soft. We look easy to expose. We have done for quite a while. Whether it's down the flanks, whether it's down the middle. I know there have been some individual mistakes, and people might want to write those off. Some people will say, well, you can't legislate for those. But I also think you can try and approach a game in a way which minimizes the potential for those mistakes to happen. And if you allow the opposition, let's say going back to Watford, if you allow a team to bombard you in terms of possession, in terms of crosses, in terms of getting touches in your own area, you know, eventually at this level of football, whether the team is bottom of the table or not, they've got players good enough to punish you, or they will force you into making mistakes. Not that the Socrates one was forced, but, you know, it was a consequence of doing something that the players looked uncomfortable doing throughout the game, you know, from the first half. So it's about changing the perception of who you are, you know, because yeah, right now, if you were a team coming to face Arsenal, you'd be going, great. I know they've got Aubameyang. I know they've got, well, you know, Lacazette's injured, but, you know, they've got Pepe and they've got, you know, some good attacking players. But, like, you know, give us a go at that defense. Give us a go at that midfield. Because if you can get the momentum of the game going in your way, we find it, that's another thing that worries me, is that we find it so difficult to change that.
Mm. And that actually isn't a new thing. I mean, that's been a weird hangover for, you know, from the Wenger era. I mean, we would lose games and get smashed and, you know, as I was saying before, you know, there'd be 2-3 goals and suddenly it was like, oh my God, what's happened? And the players would be completely stunned. It was almost as if they would be, you know, so much of a kind of like, oh my God, the balls of the other team to score against us. And then suddenly it was like, oh my God, this is actually quite hard because the crowd are roaring them on. And then, oh, you know, and suddenly it'd be like 1-2-3. Oh, right, game over. Thanks very much. And it was always, I mean, it was often mostly away from home. But that's why so many, this game plan we played tonight is so risky, because all the way through the first half, I thought, oh my God, if we concede one here, this is going to be a really, really difficult night.
Mm.
And actually, I was thinking that at Watford at the weekend, but we got the goal on the break, as we did this time. The difference in this situation was just we didn't score the second one at the right time. We didn't score the third one at the right time on the weekend.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, time-wise and with the sending off, it really made a big difference.
It's, you know, if you look at the game against Frankfurt tonight, you know, you might put it down as kind of a classic European performance in a way that, you know, you're away from home. You're not going to go and play expansive football. You win 3-0. You've kept a clean sheet. Okay, you've ridden your luck a little bit. Your goalkeeper has made a couple of good saves. They've missed some good chances, and they missed a couple of really, really good chances. And I know that we did too, you know, particularly in the first half. You think of Torreira's chance very early on, which would have given the game a different shape. Joe Willock as well, before he scored his goal. But, you know, what way are we going to approach this Villa game at the weekend? You know, is it a case that we're gonna all of a sudden go out and be on the front foot and attack and leave space behind for our defenders? Is that what Villa will expect us to do? Is that something Emery is going to look at and say, well, Villa will expect us, you know, at home to come out and play and to really give it a good bash, but, you know, to fool them, we'll play in this kind of weird, deep-lying, counter-attacking way that gets us the opportunity to use the pace of Aubameyang and Pepe kind of thing. You know, I'm just so in the dark about what it is he wants his team to be. That's where I find it, you know, so difficult to connect with him, but also the football that we play, because, you know, I had no idea what way we were gonna line up tonight. Was he gonna, you know, change everything? Was he gonna play, you know, two up top again, just one up top? You know, you just didn't know, or you don't know, and perhaps that unpredictability is a positive thing, because it's difficult for the opposition to know what you're gonna do. But, like, I just find it so hard to connect with what Emery is trying to do with this team, because I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to fall in love if you don't know the person, right? You know, you're kind of I think you're right. I mean, it's curious because it almost all, you know, the wins seem to depend on certain players clicking and the chances being taken. But we could play 100 games in a very similar style, lose 50 of them 4-0 and win 50 of them 3-1 or something, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing that seems consistent at the moment is the fact that we're going to concede chances. The rest of it all kind of sort of, it seems to be kind of butterfly effect stuff, right? You know, someone makes a great save and we go up the other end and score. The alternative being, you know, a sliding doors moment or something, you know, they go and score and then they go and score a second one. It is very unpredictable at the moment. And I think we need to kind of lay down something of a steady run of games. I mean, last year when we went, 22 games unbeaten. The weird thing about that was you kept watching us and going, we're not really playing very well here, but we're somehow grinding out some results.
Yeah.
I feel like we're more likely to excite now, but I don't see us actually being capable of just grinding out boring games. We're a very, very strange side. And I guess it's the result of us being incredibly top heavy, right? I mean, we knew that the defense was a problem and it may well take another couple of windows to sort that imbalance out. But it seems weird that from a tactical point of view, you can't try and do something to, you know, mitigate that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the Frankfurt game was reminiscent of that run last season where we allowed the opposition a lot of chances, and had the opposition taken their chances last season, that run of games would not have been anywhere near as impressive. It reminded me of that. And then I'm thinking about like what Emery must be thinking, and it's like, okay, I have to do something to make this team more defensively solid. We cannot give up 20, 25 attempts on goal in every game, because ultimately if you do that, you're going to let in more than you score, particularly if once again we were outshot by the opposition, which is another feature of the football that we're playing under Emery. So I'm thinking, okay, is he thinking, right, I've got to make the team more defensively secure, how do I do that while at the same time trying to play to the strengths of this team and this squad, which clearly, you know, when we've got Lacazette fit, we've got this fantastic, potentially fantastic strike trio up there. I know Pepe hasn't done it yet, but it feels to me like he needs a performance, or he needs a moment or something which will kickstart his Arsenal career. And in Aubameyang, we have one of the best strikers in the world, and we have to try and play to his strengths. So I'm just wondering, how is he going to marry those two things? How is he going to find the balance between needing to be more defensively secure and also making sure that we're not asking Aubameyang to run himself into the ground to get like one or two chances a game?
I mean, Aubameyang's not going to be able to play every game 90 minutes every game as he has been so far this season. I can only assume that he's decided to take the risk with him at the moment because he's looking at Lacazette being injured and thinking, well, when Lacazette comes back, I'm going to have to give Aubameyang a breather, and hopefully by that point Pepe will be up to speed. The only thing that I will say of Emery is I'm going to give him the opportunity to play Bellerin and Tierney, and if after a month, 6 weeks of them playing in a back line that looks a bit more like the back line we all expected when, you know, we bought Tierney, if we're still conceding 25 shots on goal every game, then I think at that point, I'll be like, you know, Emery probably has to go, because there's no way we'll be able to kind of compete for trophies like that.
Or for the top four.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt until he's got his first choice defense out there. But if that defense isn't coached to do what it needs to do, then I think we're going to have massive problems.
Well, I think it goes beyond the defense. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing Bellerin back. I'm looking forward to seeing Tierney make his debut. You know, by all accounts, he's really, really impressing in training. The under-23 game is coming up. They're both going to play. So that's really positive. We have to be careful as well. You know, we can't just throw them in and expect them to be top class and right up to speed straight away. It's going to take them a little while. But, you know, I think if we fall into the trap of thinking, well, if we get our fullbacks in and get a consistent back four, and I'm not saying it won't help. Like, if we could play the same back four on a fairly regular basis, that would be a real benefit to this team, no question. But I feel like we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we thought that that's the root of the problem. I think it goes beyond that, and I think we really have to think about midfield as well.
Mm. I mean, it does feel like there's a weird situation with Torreira going on where he is almost giving up on him as a kind of defensive shield, and
yeah,
thinks he'd rather play him further forward up the pitch, right?
Yeah.
I find that really curious, given that everyone thought that Torreira's reputation when he came to the club was to play as a kind of anchor man. But he obviously doesn't seem to kind of fancy him there.
No. Yeah. I think it's a physical thing. I've said this on the podcast with James. I think it's, you know, he just wants a bigger guy in that position. But then I don't know why you can't play Torreira and somebody else, you know, with two sort of deeper lying midfield players.
Maybe he wants a bigger guy in there because he's instructed everybody else to let all these big crosses come in, and he needs a big guy in there.
Yeah, that could well be it. All right, well, look, before we go, I want to ask you about your really interesting tube journey, and you mentioned that you were reading an article about Emi Martinez.
Yeah.
On the tube.
It was on the Overground.
I was heading to
work this morning, okay. And I was taking a slightly different route, and I was travelling from Loughborough Junction to Farringdon, and I kind of squeezed on, and I was like, really, it was face to face on there. It was really, really difficult to move, but somehow I kind of manoeuvred my hand into my pocket, and you know, I saw there was a notification from The Athletic that James had written an article about Emi Martinez, and there I was trying to squeeze my hand into a position where I could read it. And you know, you get that feeling when someone's sort of looking over your shoulder and just sort of reading over your shoulder. And I was like, this is really creepy. And I thought, oh, hang on. And he went, I've not heard of this player. Who's he? And I was like, oh, no, please. Like,
Don't talk to me.
This is a really packed trade. The last thing I want to do is talk to someone. And suddenly he's sort of like, no, so, you know, where's he from? And I was like, oh, he's been on loan, you know, blah, blah, giving the background about Emi Martinez to a carriage full of people who couldn't give a shit. And anyway, this guy, a couple of people got off and there was a bit more space, and I sort of got face to face with him, and he sort of introduced himself, said he was here working for a charity for 2 weeks. He's from the pool, massive Arsenal fan. And then he sort of pointed to someone else who he was with and said, you know, he's a Watford fan, blah, blah, blah. And he very quickly sort of said, it's my dream to go to the Emirates. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, good dream to have. Probably not at the moment because we're a bit dodgy and, you know, making kind of gallows humour about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just said, oh, well, you know, I said, there's a match on Tuesday. You should see if you can get a ticket. And then I thought, oh, hang on a minute. I mean, I can probably get him a ticket. So that's what I'm doing. I'm taking a random dude I met on the train. He's from the pool and he's going to come with me to Arsenal next Tuesday.
To see Arsenal versus Nottingham Forest in the Carabao Cup?
Exactly. He seems very, very excited about it. so I will give you an update next week. But, you know, the best thing about it actually is I went to check, see if I could get tickets. There was loads available, including the two seats next to me. So he doesn't even have to sit on his own. He gets to get the full Alan experience.
Wow.
I'll be yelling at the referee or something and he'll be appalled.
Hello, I am appalled from Nepal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
anyway,
awesome.
I hope he has a good time. I hope I don't ruin it for him. I hope Arsenal win. But yeah, should be fun.
That's cool. What an amazing random act of kindness that was.
Well, you know, I figured if I do something nice for someone, maybe something nice will happen to me.
Exactly. Pay it forward, man. It'll
all
come back on you in the end. Maybe it will be like a Gabriel Martinelli hat trick against Nottingham Forest, and this guy from Nepal will just have a fantastic time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Well, look, well done for that. I think that's really cool. And thank you for the chat.
My pleasure.
We'll catch you on the next one.
Sounds good. See you later.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter at @AAllenSport, @AAllenSport, and of course writing lots of stuff on Arseblog News, as well as being the co-host of his own podcast. Everyone's got a podcast these days, you know. It's called the Left Field Podcast at leftfield_pod. If you want to find out more about that, it's about sport and stuff. So, you know, if you like sport and you like stuff, then, you know, give it a try. So this weekend we're playing Aston Villa. Given that we've just played, we don't know anything about team news or anything like that ahead of that game. 3 points, vital, of course, given that we dropped a couple away from home last weekend. We're at home. We're playing a team that, with all due respect, you should be looking to beat if you're Arsenal Football Club. They've just been promoted. You're not taking anything for granted or underestimating the opposition, but hopefully we can see a performance. Hopefully we can continue this improvement, you know, with the shots on goal thing. Like, maybe if we have 25% less against Villa, that would be good too. And, you know, if we perhaps took a few more shots than the opposition, that would also be good. But we've got a whole weekend to prepare for that, because it is a Sunday afternoon game. I'm going over to see my first game in the flesh this season, so hoping it's going to be a good day out and hoping that Arsenal can take 3 points. James and I will be recording the Arscast Extra on Monday in London, actually, which is going to be a bit strange. I'll explain why it's a little bit strange on the Arscast Extra on Monday. In the meantime, if you would like something else to listen to, James and I just did the first episode of a brand new podcast exclusively for Patreon members, where we talk about anything except Arsenal. We talk about subjects suggested by our Patreon members, and on the agenda this week was video games, we had evil otters, we had food, we had all kinds of stuff in there as well. So if you want to listen to that, you can do so by becoming an Arsblog member on Patreon by going to patreon.com/Arsblog. It costs $5 a month. You get instant access to all the content that we have on there. You get ad-free versions of the Arscast and the Arscast Extra. We've got brand new updates for our apps coming. We've got an iOS app out, and Android app is coming soon. You can get ad-free Android apps with your Patreon subscription, and it supports everything that we do on the site. So if you fancy doing a bit of that, patreon.com/arsblog. If you don't worry about it. Everything that has always been free and available to you on Arsblog will continue to be free and available to you as it always has been. Right, I'm going to leave it there. Have yourselves a fantastic Friday. Have a great weekend. And fingers crossed we can do the business against Villa on Sunday. James and I'll thrash it out on Monday, whatever happens. Until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Good evening. Yes, I think it's a very good performance from Saka. And also Willock play very well. Good progression of the ball through midfield is very good. But Saka and Willock are very impressive Good evening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.